Hello, welcome to the Start Me Up podcast with me, Kimberly A. Johnson, and Steph Walton. Hey, Steph.
Hey.
It's May 24th, and the year is just flying by.
I know. Does it not feel like dog years?
Like on one hand, it feels like it's going fast, and on the other,
on the other hand,
it goes slow.
Unreal.
It's been crazy, and we have a lot of things to talk about today.
Yes, indeedy.
How have you been, by the way? I haven't talked to you for quite some time.
I know, and I've been great, but I feel like we haven't talked for a year because so much has transpired in the news world.
Yeah, but you had like great. A vacation or something, right?
Oh my God, yeah, it's nuts. I think last time we spoke, we were, I don't know, starting to turn into a more positive, at least I'll speak for myself. It was things were taking a positive turn for me. I was feeling uplifted with the news. And now it's just like I've gone back into that mania, but it's like mania because I just want my next tidbit of insanity where politics are concerned. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I made a post on Twitter the other day. It's like you get used to breaking news. And then when you have a day where there's not a lot of breaking news, or at least the breaking news isn't like a bombshell, you feel like you're starving for the next morsel of bombshell.
Starving. And you know what? It's entertaining because you cannot, as people say, you just cannot make this stuff up. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's so much crime and treason surrounding this administration. Like I find myself getting kind of depressed. Like, why are they not all in jail yet?
Yeah.
Why are these people still in power? Like, I don't, that's the part I have trouble with, And I know, I guess it takes time, but here we've got somebody that, it's determined that the Russians tampered with the election. Nobody disputes that.
Trump never even speaks out against it.
Exactly. I mean, he asked the build Russians
their
to
case.
Meddle.
They have to build their case, and we need some kind of proof. Obviously, we know that the Russians interfered with our election, but that doesn't necessarily mean Trump is guilty of something. I think he is, but I mean, that information in and of itself doesn't mean Trump should go to jail. Right now, the evidence is being collected by the FBI. And I think in time, and I really don't think it's going to, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it's going to take that long. It almost feels like it's taking forever, but, we want to make sure that, I would say the FBI wants to make sure that they have everything they need so they don't fuck it all up.
Right. No, you're right. And that makes complete sense to me, but it still messes with me.
Yeah, but you're like, how the hell can this happen?
Right. I'm a Twitter hound. I have to have up to the minute news. So I go to bed last night and I'm dreaming of Scott Dworkin on Twitter. This is no joke.
No, I'm there with you.
He gets me through my days.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because, actually I just posted an article from Blue Dot Daily that, covered his, I'm going to get it right now, covered a bunch of his tweets. And so the lead on this is Scott Dworkin, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition, recently released over 200 legally obtained Trump documents. After sifting through them, Dworkin has put together a money trail using the documents that ties Russian money to several top Republican leaders. And so somebody on my Facebook page complained and said, too many things are not true on Twitter. Louise Mensch has been exposed. And I'm going to get to that in a minute. But this is all like documents that have been legally obtained.
Right.
And it's like, and then somebody else wrote, I'm not going to believe anything by Blue Dot Daily. And it's like, I don't usually share Blue Dot Daily and I don't know much about them, but this is all just taking Scott Dworkin's Twitter feed. That's all it is. It's not like somebody, the author for Blue Dot Daily just sat there in their living room and conjured up some fake news story. This is something that, this guy is legitimately tweeting about.
Right.
So, I wish people would be a little bit more savvy when it comes to the whole fake news thing, because there is a lot of fake news out there, and fake news is just a false story. And then, but and being pushed as news. Like, for instance, what the Republicans are pushing about that Seth guy, that the DNC had him murdered or something. I mean, that's fucking bullshit.
And it that's is. Fake there's news. No, there's no basis in that. And Hannity, you know, shame on you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we could say that any day of the week, we could say that about him. But for right now, it's like Fox said, stop.
Yeah.
No more. And he continues to do it. And that's all he's posting on Twitter. And now he's crying about people boycotting the advertisers who advertise in his show. Well, that's what happens, dumbass.
Totally.
Call your buddy Bill O'Reilly. You guys can start a podcast together.
Yeah.
Okay, fellas.
All right. Well, let's get to also, I want to just think it's fascinating that 2 days in a row, Melania slaps away Trump's hand. Now, somebody made a point on one of my posts saying, well, you know, maybe she's smarter than him and she realizes that public displays of affection are not good in those situations. Okay, oh maybe if that's true, maybe that theory would hold up on the first day and then, you know, they'd go home and Melania would remind him of this, but then it happened again. It's just clear that that woman is so sickened by him. And it's so funny because people, you know, either say, you know, she needs help or she's some villain. And she, I don't think she's either. She's not a victim. She's not a villain. She's an opportunist who knew who she was marrying. I don't feel sorry for her. You know, I don't really care. I feel sorry for Barron, but,
I'm with you. I agree 100%.
Yeah.
She saw this as an opportunity. She wanted, you know, she wanted the money. She wanted maybe the fame, who knows, but the money for sure. Follow the money.
Yeah.
And now this is where she is. She's lying in that bed that she made for herself.
And she doesn't even have to share it with Trump now.
I mean, I worry about that little boy.
I know.
And that makes me sad. But the rest of them, the adults, and, you know, Tiffany, the one, I have to just bring up Tiffany for a second, because she's the one that people were, you know, initially making fun of, the one that he didn't want to surround himself with, and he threw
Lucky
her the bone.
Lucky Tiffany.
Right. And Tiffany is the one who's staying clear.
Yeah.
Of all of this, but Ivanka and the brothers and Jared, like, I have fantasies that I'm not going to say out loud because I don't want that to be used against me later.
Yeah.
But I mean, those people make me as sick as their father does. Yeah,
me too.
Because they are complicit.
They're complicit, but I think they actually have their own active roles.
So, absolutely. You know, of course they do.
They are just as guilty and, there was that bombshell last week that dropped that somebody close in the White House close to Trump is being investigated. And so, of course, the speculation was Jared Kushner. And I wouldn't be surprised at all. I mean, there was that article that dropped about Jared Kushner yesterday about how he's basically a slumlord.
He's a slumlord and he's suing people who legally get out of their lease agreements.
Yeah.
And then they come back later and clear out their bank accounts. And these people are barely putting food on the table for their families. He's disgusting. He's disgusting. I love Chris
people.
Hayes on Twitter last week says, you know, rumor has
yes.
it. And there's someone who's close to Trump who's being investigated, a White House official, and his name rhymes with Barron Tushner.
You got to love Chris Hayes.
I do love
He's
him.
So
I
funny.
Love him to death.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm going to get to, I want to bring this up in a little bit, but.
Let's go back to hand slaps.
Go for it.
Well, okay, so the hand slap, I laugh because, of course, you know, I see this and I think it's an Israeli news organization that posted this beautiful GIF. First, it was her walking, then she gets the slap, and then they zero in on it, and then they show the slap up close. And immediately in my mind, I hear, you can't touch this. Bow, 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 bow. You can't touch this, right? Because she isn't having any of it. You are right. He sickens her.
Yeah.
Like,
it's all over her face.
Do they even talk to each other at night? Like, they get into the presidential suite. Are there separate rooms? Do they pull a roll away?
No, she lives in New York. She lives in New York.
Right, but they're on this tour together right now.
Yeah, right.
So they're in Saudi Arabia. And, like, honestly, is there a cot in the living area for her, or what's going on? And is he really just eating frozen pizzas? You know, rogue White House staffer put a menu with the list of demands, like Trump's rider, right?
Right.
And it was like Hungry Man, frozen chicken dinners, Sara Lee, cherry pies. You know, one of the tweets said Air Force One is currently being loaded with dozens of frozen pizzas because Trump won't eat food on the road. Like, this man, are we dreaming?
Why aren't his arteries clogged? I mean, why isn't he like grasping at his heart? And, you know, it seems like the people who are healthy and they go running, they drop dead while they're running. Yet Trump is eating, you know, frozen pizzas or whatever, and steak ash with blocks of steak ash with ketchup. And he's still going. I don't get it.
Did you see what the Pope said to Melania today? So obviously you made this beautiful post, no words needed. It's, you know, here's the Pope with Obama. Ha 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 ha. Here is Angela Merkel. I love you. And then Trump, and he looks like he's grimacing almost.
Yeah.
And then I saw something on MSNBC today where the Pope is greeting Melania and they're laughing, ha 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 smiles. And Trump's standing there looking like there's the biggest doofus on the planet. And he says to the Pope says to Melania, what are you feeding him? And she goes, pizza. And it's for real, man. So, yeah. You know, she can't stand him. What's the message she's sending? The world is watching. Okay, the world is watching. She's mocking her husband with the Pope on television worldwide. She swats his hand. And then twice. She disses him and touches her bangs to avoid touching his hand the next day. Like, what's the message she's sending?
Well, I think, okay, I'm going to jump ahead of myself a little, but we will get back to it. So as I've said before, there's a gentleman on Twitter I follow named Claude Taylor, and I do want to discuss this part later. Anyway, Claude had posted that somebody from MSM, mainstream media, mm-hmm. Shared that, you know, and of course we don't know if this is absolutely true, but anyway, shared that divorce proceedings were underway, mm-hmm. and then he won. So if that's true, which, you know, all you need to do to see that there's problems in the marriage is take a look at that famous GIF or JIF or however you want to call it, when he was inaugurated and, you know, he turned around and she smiled and then he turned back the other way and she made that horrid grimace. Mm-hmm. And that really haunted me. I didn't dream about it, but I would literally lay in bed and think about that and wonder mm-hmm. about how horrible it is for her. Not that
to be her and to have to be associated with him.
Yeah. And how much she hates him. And again, it's not that I feel so sorry for her because she knew mm-hmm. what she's getting into, but I understand that she's clearly not happy. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think that let's just go with this theory. And that's all it is a theory that divorce proceedings were underway and then he wins and then she's stuck. I think she's stuck in a situation where she can't leave. And she is pissed off. So this is her way to rebel. And it's her way to show the world that she hates him. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure he can scold her for that privately or whatever, but legal action isn't necessarily going to be taken. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't want to be first lady. That's obvious. Mm-hmm. And she has no interest in the role. She just wants to be rid of this whole thing. And I really don't fault her for the not wanting to be first lady thing. I get it. I mean, she is paying the price literally of, you know, marrying him. And now she's stuck in this situation, but I don't think, you know, on Bill Maher the other night, he bet that Boris somebody else, I don't know how to say his last name, Boris E., who is a Trump supporter and a political strategist. Bill Maher made a gentleman's bet with him that Trump wouldn't last through this Christmas. Yeah. And I have a feeling, you know, as we were talking about earlier, it feels like things are taking forever, but it's going much faster than Watergate did, because not only do we have an internet, we've got, you know, he pissed off the FBI, he pissed off the CIA. So people are leaking. Everybody in the White House hates him. So people are leaking, and it's only a matter of time before something really big goes down, and he probably is going to, you know, resign. However that's going to happen, I wasn't sure about the resignation before. It really all just depends, I think, on his relationship with Russia and Putin. Because if Putin does not want him to step down, then he's got to pay his master.
He's Putin's bitch.
He's got to answer to his master. So it's going to be fascinating to watch how this all unfolds. But I don't think Melania is going to be stuck with him for that much longer.
No, the minute I'll have a gentlewoman's bet with you right now, although you probably agree with me. The second he either is impeached or resigns, yes, or whatever, Melania's out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, she's out.
Like that those papers will be served and it will be over, and she's going to take Barron and shield herself from him. I mean, here's a man who doesn't spend Mother's Day with his current wife and the mother of his child. He tweets her his wishes on Mother's Day while his ass is out on the golf course. What about his little boy? Like, what does that kid, again, back to the poor Barron thing. I feel bad for the boy, but he'll be so much better off once he's free.
Right.
Poor thing.
I know. I just feel, you know, whatever. Again, you know, they got themselves into this situation, not Barron, but she married him. She had to see him naked and get pregnant.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine like the Trump naked thing?
Actually, yes, I imagine it all the time.
Well, he's got that statue.
I know exactly what it looks like.
That statue that went up during the campaign season that I never posted it because it's body shaming, blah, blah, blah. But still, I'm sure that was very close to what his actual body looked like. And I was like, blah.
Well, and even if he had a hot body, he's just so repulsive.
Yes.
I couldn't bring myself to do it.
Yeah, but he's not hot in any way. He is horribly disgusting.
Horribly.
So, okay, I'm going to bring this around. I have opinions here that I will share about Bob Seska is my producer, and he's heard me bitch about this every fucking night. So my apologies to him for repeating myself endlessly. And he even wrote a piece in Salon kind of covering this. But, you know, I like to follow the Claude Taylor guy on Twitter. I also like John Schindler, and there's a few others. Louise Mensch is in on this because Claude and Louise often pair up whether to write blogs or to share information. They also share each other's tweets. Mm-hmm. Louise is, although I will read her stuff, I'm not as... What's the word? I'm not as impressed with her. She's gotten things right. She's gotten things wrong. So she was a member of parliament, and obviously she built up, she's a conservative, and she was team Trump, before the whole Russia scandal broke. But anyway, she's always tweeting about, you know, people from Intel are giving her information and then she'll blog about it. So, then this Claude Taylor pops up. He, according to his Twitter and then, you know, looking him up, he was involved with three presidential campaigns, and he worked in the Clinton White House as like head of the volunteer, whatever it is. Like, I don't know what you would call it, but the volunteers, he ran that part. So obviously he's developed friendships, and people are coming to him and spilling the beans. Now that he's gotten this huge following on Twitter, he's gotten the attention of other people, like, you know, mainstream media people, more intel people. And as I said earlier, you know, as soon as Comey got fired, the first thing you heard from everybody was expect more, you know, like the gushing of leaks, like so many leaks. So, of course, these are the kinds of people that intel will reach out to. And mainstream media isn't going to cover all of these leaks, because they need to be vetted by, you know, each station, each organization has their own protocol and their own verification, you know, how they decide what's a verified story and what isn't. So in some cases, I imagine, you know, the Claude source is one source. And, you know, it's the kind of thing where mainstream media isn't going to post something that's just from one source. It doesn't mean it's accurate. It doesn't mean it isn't accurate. They're just not going to post it. He will. So what I'm seeing here is there's all this fighting. So there's bring into the mix Seth Abramson, who is a writer for Huffington Post. He says Washington Post on his byline, but I can't find anything. So I don't know about that. Anyway, he's consistently going after them, and he's so pissed off because he's saying that they're ruining everything and all these liberals are following them and we're all just so mindless and you know, but what winds up happening is, let's say Claude tweets something on Thursday, and then the following Wednesday mainstream media picks up on it, and then Seth tweets it.
Right.
Is it breaking news? And doesn't say, hey, yeah, Claude actually said this 2 weeks ago. Instead, he feels satisfied attacking them and calling them fake news, which I think is stupid because, number one, Louise Munch and Claude Taylor are not news. They're people who, Claude doesn't even have a blog. Louise has a blog. Mm-hmm. I believe she used to write for The Guardian. Maybe she still does. Maybe she doesn't. I don't know too much about that. There were pictures of her. Seth found a picture of her sitting next to Milo Yiannopoulos and was trying to call her out. And, you know, frankly, this is what I think. I don't really give a shit. I hate Milo. But if she has information from Intel, for me, the way I look at it is it's just kind of fun to speculate. You take it with the understanding that it may not actually be, but for us who are, you know, for those of us who are hungry for the tidbits and for putting things together, it's kind of fun. And it's like, maybe that, you know, because in the end, no one's going to die if Claude is wrong. No one's going to lose money. No one's going to, you know, really be impacted in any negative way if he's wrong. The person who's going to be negatively impacted would be Claude. He'll lose credibility if he's consistently wrong. So what difference does it make? I just don't understand this stupid fighting. It's so irritating to me. And I love to go to his feed. I go multiple times a day, and you know, and I love to look at what they're going to post because oftentimes he has been accurate. His sources are right on the money.
Right.
So, you know, there you go.
That's my thought. Pissing contest.
Yeah.
It is all it is. And, you know, Seth thinks he's legit because he was with HuffPo for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah. I think he still is. Yeah.
And he hates Louise because Louise gets in his face and she's a sassy lady.
That is a word for her.
Yeah. And, you know, it just, I like the news. I love that Claude and Louise tend to be correct. You know, they say, hey, look, this is what we're getting from our sources.
Right.
And watch it come true.
Yeah. And if it doesn't, who cares?
If it doesn't, they own it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And who cares? Like, in the end, if it's not true, who's it hurting?
Exactly.
Nobody. So, I know you and I will say this on the podcast, and you know, our listeners will hear it, and then that'll be then. There's always going to be fighting, but you know, whatever. I just see that, and I think, are you kidding? This is what you're choosing to be outraged about when there's all this other stuff happening. And I don't know, you know, I mean, when I see the Claude's and Louise's followers, you know, they'll post that people like Seth and you know, others out there are jealous. I don't know if it's jealousy. I don't know if it's a genuine concern for getting the right information out there, but I don't see them as legitimate news sources. I just see them as people who have sources. That's all. So, you know, for what that's worth.
Yeah, no, I just, the more information I can have that's going to keep me up at night, the better off I am.
It's just kind of, it keeps you going in this, you know, we're all kind of stuck, and especially now that Mueller is taking over the investigation. And he's known for keeping everything tight. He doesn't like leaks. So although there are going to be leaks, there may be a lot that we're just never going to know. We're either never going to know, or while it's happening, we're not going to know. And it's going to feel like nothing's happening. So this is kind of a way to keep things like, okay, things are going, you know, because everybody wants to feel like something's getting done. And if we don't hear every detail about what's getting done, there are too many people out there who make the assumption that nothing's being done. And obviously something's being done, but you know, it's an investigation. They can't tell us everything. Duh. Right.
And you nailed it earlier in the conversation. We are an internet we're living in the time of, you know, instantaneous news, and we can pick up our phones or open up our computers and get news from a variety of different sources in real time at any moment of the day or night. And when we don't get that information, we assume that they're at a standstill. But can you imagine what's going on behind the scenes right now? Can you imagine when Brennan sits and testifies yesterday and says, hey, look, I'm not the one that prosecutes. I saw alarming information that made me believe that there was collusion or that there could be.
Right.
And I passed it on to the feds. They're the ones who are going to, you know, bring these people to justice. That's all I needed. I could have walked away from my phone. I could have walked away from Twitter for the rest of the day and said, that gives me such satisfaction because stuff's being done.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I live in this day and age, and I must have checked my freaking phone and Twitter 100 times before I went to bed yesterday.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's literally to the point now. Well, when I plug my phone in to go to sleep at night, I almost feel like, I can't check it in 5 seconds now.
I know, it's gross. I was doing laundry last night and I had a laundry basket and I had the phone sitting on top of the laundry I was about to fold. And my son looks at me and he goes, really, Mom? You know?
But it's, I mean, you know, I would certainly not wish this on anyone. I'm so concerned about what's happening, the damage that's being done on all these different levels right now. But since it is happening and there's nothing I can do about it, it's fascinating. It's just something that, you know, this history is being made in front of our eyes. I do believe that we are at a very, very, you know, I look at this like the mainstream media, A, does not want to be alarming. They don't want to put out information that isn't true. But I also think that sometimes they err too much on the side of caution. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when I heard Brennan talking, you know, he said that Russia is known for using people and using people that don't even realize they're being used. Okay. So like, you just like picture Trump and, like unwitting agents, for them, so I think that this, you know, I have my little conspiracy about this, which I don't think is that far off. And I think that this has been, you know, and everything that Brennan said last night pretty much validated my conspiracy theory, which is that you know, Putin for some time, you know, used to head up the KGB. So for some time, he's had this idea that he wants to infiltrate America. He wants to take over the American government in any possible way he can. We know the guy's smart. We know the guy is just horribly mean. And so understanding what the climate in this country with the right wing extremists on the rise, with Fox News, with hate radio, I wouldn't be surprised at all if somebody, whether it was Putin himself or one of his minions, you know, they saw Trump and they saw a perfect person, because Brennan said they look for people who are popular and who have public, you know, like they have a brand and they have a, you know, an ability to sway public opinion or whatever. They have a public voice. So I think that it's not out of the realm of possibility to believe that this whole birther situation was born in Russia and suggested to Trump, whether it was a suggestion or by that time they already had embarrassing information on him, because he's an idiot. And it would be very easy. You know, Trump went over, and I don't know what year it was, and I don't know if this was the first time that Putin and Trump met, but, you know, Trump took a beauty pageant over to Russia and bragged about Putin. So these men know each other, and Putin knows that Trump is very easily he can be manipulated easily. All you have to do is tell him how he's great, give him all kinds of praise, and, you know, work some kind of money deal, and he's in your pocket.
Correct.
So So I don't know if there was a, you know, compromising situation, do this or we're going to release information, or simply you're just such a, you're so influential, Trump. If you were to say this, people would believe you. And then the goal is understanding that the divide in the country was already in place. There was already a group of people who thought that Barack Obama was a Muslim and that he didn't have a birth certificate. All of a sudden, Trump becomes a dog with a bone and he won't let it go and he won't let it go. And because of his name, he gets to go on CNN and he gets to go on all these talk shows and push this bullshit. And this is, and so in the process, you know, Putin and his minions are making friends in the Republican Party. They're doing financial deals with all these people. And, you know, regardless of the hack for the RNC hack, you know, I'm sure they have information that they could have pulled that they can hold over some of these, you know, elected officials' heads. But I think before that, they did deals. They did financial deals. Like, for instance, Rex Tillerson, take a look at him. Does he look like he wants that job?
Hells to the Nizzo.
And he he clearly had financial dealings with Putin and Russia and probably something embarrassing. So now he has to, instead of doing his deals like he was happy doing before he became the Secretary of State, now he's forced to go do this.
Correct. So it goes from unwittingly to wittingly.
I'm exposed.
Years to develop.
Yeah.
And they, you know, who was on Brian Williams last night? Malcolm Nance, yes. And then this dude, Jack Bretsky, or I can't remember his last name, but he was a KGB guy. He's now a U.S. citizen. And he says, these guys are so smart, and there is such a formula to this that, yeah, they bring you in, they do exactly what you said. And that's, I believe, you know, I don't know for a fact, but it makes perfect
right.
sense that's
the
what
whole
happened
point.
With Trump and Tillerson.
Yeah.
And then you see Scott Dworkin post, you know, the documentation that shows that people tied to Putin gave Mitch McConnell $2.5 million mm-hmm. or one of his super PACs.
Right.
Same, not quite that huge an amount for Ryan, but the same thing, Rubio. I mean, mm-hmm. so does that make them all dirty? I don't know if that makes them all dirty. They're taking money from Russia and they don't want
they
to
are all dirty.
President.
They're all dirty.
So
I mean,
I'm sorry, but that I don't know enough. I'm really, really looking forward. Like, I'm popping popcorn on Friday nights. And I start watching MSNBC, and then I go directly to Bill Maher, and that is my entertainment.
Yeah, me too. And also, John Oliver. Do you watch him?
Oh, I'm in love.
He does that
with
whole
him.
Stupid Watergate thing. That's so funny.
Oh, God. He's just brilliant, isn't he?
He is so brilliant. But I think, you know, bringing it back to the MSM being too cautious, in a way I can understand. But what concerns me is that we don't really fully understand how deep the tentacles, Putin's tentacles are in our government. And, mm-hmm. and you know, because I lived in Russia and I saw firsthand what it's like to live in a communist country, Soviet rule, I recognize that it doesn't take much for a small group to control a large group. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have the military, you have everything. Mm-hmm. So that worries me. And I think right now we are on the brink. We have an opportunity right now. And I hope that we, as a country, figure out how to get a smoking gun and to get all of these people who are involved out. And then I hope that the people, the voters, really, really show up in numbers too big to ignore, numbers too big to allow gerrymandering to be, you know, such a something that's going to get in the way of what should be. So, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, and then because if we don't get Democrats back in by, I don't remember when they're going to do the census, but that's when they can go back and redraw the districts,
right.
which I would actually wish that it was more fair, you know, if we could only get somebody who was absolutely have no, you know, partisan interest whatsoever. But I don't know, how do you do that? But anyway, I'm very concerned, you know, I'm very concerned that Russia is so far deep into our government as it is, mm-hmm. and to what degree we don't know. And it is something very frightening. And I do see the mainstream media. Like I said, I understand their caution. They don't want to be alarmist. They don't want to set off panic. But on the other hand, I don't really see too many people, with the exception of Rachel Maddow, kind of at least making the suggestion, because she never pushes her own theories. She presents the facts and information, and then she asks questions. The kind of questions like, why is this happening?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you answer yourself based on the knowledge that you have, what you think it could be. But thank God for Rachel Maddow, because she is, you know, I mean, there are other people out there doing a good job. But I think as far as, you know, covering this Trump-Russia thing, she is, she's just above and beyond everybody else.
Well, she brought all of that Russian oligarchy, that madness with the real estate deal and the mold-ridden pile of shit piece of real estate he had in was it in Palm Beach or wherever the hell that the Russian oligarch bought for double what he was asking when it was on the market forever, just prior to him having to file bankruptcy one more time. And this Russian oligarch bails him out and never moves in. Like all that stuff, you know, it was the manure king.
Yeah.
It brought all of that to light. And now everybody's on that bandwagon. She has done some of the best investigative journalism, you know, that I've seen in years. And thank God for her. And by the way, the next census is in 2020. So we got a little bit of time and we got Clarence Thomas.
Yes.
You know,
that was a shock, wasn't it?
That was a shock. And that's the kind of thing that warms my heart.
Me too.
That gives me, it makes me feel like, oh my God, it's not all bad.
Yeah.
It's not all bad. But you know, we'll see. What I love is that, you know, districts where, you know, no Republican has ever been elected to the state assembly in Long Island, for example, just flipped.
Yeah.
And it went to a Bernie delegate, a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing happened in New Hampshire. Never, ever was a Democrat in that position before. And a Democratic woman took it over in New Hampshire. And I can't, her name is escaping me right now. But, you know, then we've got Daryl Issa, and then we've got, you know, all of these other, you know, Beto O'Rourke and Ossoff in Georgia. Mm-hmm. Like, this is unbelievable. Now, will Rob Quist in Montana win? Maybe not, but he's closer to than any other Democrat has ever gotten in that district.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really encouraging things. And people are fighting and resisting and opening their eyes. And young people are aware of what's going on. And really, I've never seen more people, just regular people like me and people that I associate with, who know this much about the political climate and what's going on in politics right now and what's happening to our world, and who are actually taking a stand, you know, and engaging in conversation.
Well, and it should be that way all the time. You know,
we should be that way all the time. Yes, it should.
But we get comfortable. And that's the problem, is that Democrats, you know, I'll give it to the conservatives, no matter what, they will show up, they march in lockstep, and every single time they're going to go with their guy or woman or whoever it is, they're going to go with them and stand behind them. Whereas Democrats, not always the case.
Right. Well, look what happened to us.
Yeah. And, you know, I promised, or I posted, that we were going to do a show today, and I said I was going to talk about the divisive Dems. And I'm not going to post about it on Facebook because I really don't feel like arguing. I don't feel like dealing with all the comments that I'm going to get. Yesterday, there was a gentleman on my page who I'm, you know, he's a nice enough man. And I made a comment about how we all have to continue to resist and how we can't get lazy and all this stuff. And so he came on and he started, you know, saying we got to get rid of the corporatist Dems. That's true. I agree. But I already know his deal. He's a Bernie supporter who is all about trashing the Democratic Party. And I understand why he wants to do it, because there is fault. There's fault at the DNC. There's fault with certain Democratic legislators and elected officials. They are certainly not perfect. And, you know, a good friend of mine who was a very, very hardcore Hillary supporter is pissed off at, you know, she has voiced why she was pissed off at the campaign and how they handled themselves. But more than that, she's really pissed off at the DNC right now. And, you know, I have my issues with the DNC. I'm angry. But when all is said and done, Right now, we have a Russian agent, who I believe is a Russian agent, installed as the American president. We mm-hmm. have people underneath of him that I believe also are either Russian agents or they are complicit, or they are like Mike Pence, who's lying, who's clearly lying about the Mike Flynn thing. So what we need to do is put our attention into getting them out, make sure that we show up for the elections that are happening now. And the, at least in my opinion, the goal is we take back the power. And once we have the power, then we focus on changing the resistance, and instead of focusing it on, you know, squashing the Republicans, we use the resistance. We don't have to call it the resistance, but it's the same energy and the same focus on pushing Democrats to be better Democrats. Mm-hmm. You know, and it and there's a way that you can do it without trashing. You know, I mean, I always take the example of, you know, Bernie's pissing me off because, number one, he's trashing the Democratic Party while he's supposed to be out there getting, you know, Democratic outreach. He's also suggesting that Democrats shouldn't politicize the Russia thing. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? There was something else. He was talking about that he didn't think Trump would be impeached, which he could be right about that.
Yeah.
But he seems to be a little dismissive of it, of the whole Russia thing, which eggs on his hardcore fanatic followers who only want to equate Russia with Hillary. And it's like, no, the Hillary thing happened. She lost in part because of Russian interference. But it ends there. That goes beyond that. It's like, you know, for Hillary, it ends there. But I'm saying that the Russian interference thing is like a whole thing in and of itself. Has nothing to do so much with Hillary Clinton. It's continuing to happen every single day. Fake news is still being, you know, put into our feeds, and Russian trolls are still out there.
So
you can't dismiss or minimalize the importance. And I think that Bernie's doing that. But it's like Elizabeth Warren admits that there are certain Democratic leaders who need to, you know, clean up their act, but she's not out there attacking them. She'll say, you know, okay, we need to get money out of, you know, we need to make it so that, you know, there are certain Democrats who are beholden to their, you know, the lobbyists or whatever, you know, the big pharma people. And okay, so then we just have to work to change that. It exists and it's not good. So instead mm-hmm. of pointing your finger and getting your, you know, which is so easy because everyone on the internet loves to get their torches and, you know, run screaming after the legislator that pisses them off the most or whatever. Instead of doing that, let's get power back and then let's change the laws. That's how we do
yes.
it.
Yes.
That's all we have to do. And then eventually everybody will just fall into place because then the laws will be different. And then if they get caught breaking the law, well, then they'll lose their fucking position. And it's not rocket science.
No. It's very easy. I think, you know, we need to all, let's all get on the same side of human decency and protecting our rights as our legal rights as human beings. And then let's move together and hash it out there.
Yeah.
But let's make sure that, you know, I mean, I don't want to get it off onto a global warming tangent. But, you know, while we're sitting tight and they're getting yeah. nothing done, the Republicans right now, but this is,
well, they are getting some things done.
Well,
remembered like John Oliver, I think it was a John Oliver, and I'll stop talking in a second, but mentioned, you know, while everybody was paying attention to this thing, I don't know if it was John Oliver, but anyway, they are doing things, hurtful damage
yeah.
every day.
Yeah, no. It's true. But what I'm saying, you know, we need to address, you know, climate change yeah. right now.
Yeah.
And we're a year and a half out or a year and, you know, 4 months out from the 2018 elections mm-hmm. when we can really turn things, you know, I get that. But what's happening for us, we need to try to stop that from worsening mm-hmm. at this moment. Meanwhile, we're so obsessed with what the fuck did he do today?
Yeah.
That we're taking our eye off the ball with some really important stuff. And yeah, they are getting stuff done and they are proposing huge cuts and they do want to take, you know, hose public education even worse than it's already hosed now. And, you know, they want to take, you know, 47% of the people who receive food stamps are children and elderly and mm-hmm. disabled or whatever it's a huge percentage. And they want to, how are those people going to go help themselves? While Mulvaney's saying, if you can work, we need you to get out there and work. We need you to get off food stamps. How do you tell that to a child?
Yeah.
You know, how do you, these are the things that are happening, you know, behind our backs while we're wondering, you know, is Trump really a Russian agent?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the kind of stuff that's, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's kind of, I don't know. I mean, you know, you were talking about feeling like, you know, you're dreaming about Scott Dworkin. Well, the other night I had this horrible dream. And I don't remember. It was many nights ago. So, you know, you start to lose details, like with every minute that you wake up from that dream. But the one thing that stands out in my dream was that there was just like this line of dead bodies.
Oh.
And I think that I was dreaming that because every single day, you know, we're watching this and it's dark. You know, we try to make light, we laugh, we post the meme with, you know, Barack Obama and the Pope as opposed to Trump and the Pope, and we can all laugh. But in the end, it's dark. It's dark and mm-hmm. it's terrifying and it's horrifying. And people are genuinely frightened for their lives. And they have good reason to be. And so I think that when I have those, I've been having really weird dreams lately. And I think it's just my, you know, my mind working out my fears and like releasing them through my dreams, or, you know, mm-hmm. however dreams work that way.
Right, right. Because your guard is down and, yeah. and this is what's on your mind. This is you care about those less fortunate than you. You care about the fact that Miami is going to disappear probably before the end of this century. And that's just one thing. You care about children who don't have access to great public education, who then, you know, Betsy DeVos and her dillweeds that are working with her wanna cut that further so that kids who might have a hope of going to college at a state school, that, you know, that's just going to be wiped out if they get their way.
Yeah.
If the DeVos team gets their way. So, you know, we're going to fight tooth and nail. We're going to, you know, California's doing a lot of great stuff, for climate change and we can, you know, continue to do that and set the standard, and we'll negotiate on the world stage mm-hmm. because we have Jerry Brown and we have people who are going to succeed Jerry Brown who are going to do that same thing.
Yeah.
And so that's awesome. And yay for California. But, in the meantime, like, I can't wait to load my car up with a bunch of people who are going to go down and fight against Daryl Issa. You know what I mean? We can do those things.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
And we're using our voices, and I'm loading the kids into the car for the March for Truth on June 3rd. Mm-hmm. And we're going to hold up our signs and we're going to be loud and proud. You know, the resistance is making a difference.
Yeah. And I just want people to remember, and I keep saying this and I'm going to keep saying this, that no matter what, the resistance needs to continue. And, you know, if we're fortunate enough to see Trump get kicked out, then it's probably going to be Mike Pence, if only for a while. You know, we're going to have him, because unless they are able to get a smoking gun on Pence at the exact same time that they get one on Trump, you know,
there's always that hope.
Yeah.
I hope,
but
I
then
hope,
it goes to Paul Ryan and then they need.
But he's dirty, too.
Well, that's the thing. But we don't know. You know, I did an article the other day about Mike Pence, and people on social media, they can just be so funny that, you know, they like to comment about, oh, well, he's dirty too. It's like, yes, I know he's dirty. And I said that in the article. But the point is that more than likely, if Trump goes, we will see a Trump president. I mean, I'm sorry, a Pence president, even for a brief period of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't think we're just going to go straight to Orrin Hatch. I don't think it's going to go from Trump to Orrin Hatch. It's like, I think if it's going to go down, they're going to go, you know, kind of one at a time, unless, like I said, they get a smoking gun on all three all at once. Then maybe. But I mean, how likely is that? It's like so unlikely.
It's so unlikely.
But, you know, everybody, all the commenters on Facebook know better.
That would be a Democratic wet dream.
Oh, I know. I know.
You know, it would be the hat trick.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. So last Friday night, Bill Maher had David Frum.
Yes.
And
used
Frum
to irritate
said,
the living shit out of me, and now I actually like him.
Oh, I love him. He's a voice of reason.
Yeah.
He said, poor guy, wait, I'm sorry, but
he had to sit next to that fucking whack job. Oh my God.
Cornel West. Yes. Jesus Christ. I mean, that dude had energy on him that was, I was like, I found him kind of like, it was attractive because he's so freaking brilliant, but he's a whack job.
Yeah.
He's a whack job. Who was the third chair? Who was the guest that came in? I can't even remember.
I don't remember either.
Anyway, he.
Oh,
and then
I know
it was.
It was the astrophysicist.
Oh right, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah.
Who was like going, what? I mean, the only thing that was missing was the swirling index finger by the side of his head, like woo-hoo. but Frum said a Pence president is fucked up, but he didn't use those words, but it's better than a Trump president.
Yeah.
And I have to like, I have to talk myself into that, but yeah, it's true.
Well, it is true in that we don't have the same kind of worries of North Korea. That doesn't,
correct.
That doesn't mean we wouldn't get into war, because I wouldn't put it past Pence to get us into a war too. Now, like, you know, there's the idea if Trump gets into a war, his approval will go up. I think it might go up briefly. I don't think it would stay. I think it would go up with Pence. I think it would be different and more favorable for Pence. So that scares me, mm-hmm. you know, and then I think that the Republicans can probably get more of their agenda done with Pence because he is one of them. And I think he knows how he's not at odds with, you know, the Republican
right.
Party hates Trump, but they're mm-hmm. also stuck. How many of them are compromised and have to go along? I don't know. Right. I mean, I honestly have no idea whether it's 10 or 50 or 100 or 2. I don't know. But
right.
there are people that are compromised. And why are they going along with this man? To me, the only reason would be that they are compromised, because again, they could mm-hmm. just go up to him. I mean, are they so worried about Trump's dwindling base? No, Republicans will vote for Republicans, period. They're never going to vote. You know,
right.
those hardcore Republicans are never going to vote for a Democrat. They'll vote for Trump before they'll vote mm-hmm. for a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they are crooked. And they're worried. But with
yes.
Pence, you know, there's all kinds of other things. So it's like we have to resist no matter who is up there. And
mm-hmm.
and then, like I said, you know, when the Democrats win, and I'm going to go with when, that doesn't mean be happy and assume. That just means we have to think positive and you know, make sure that we do everything we need to do to win. But once we win, the game's not over. Then the resistance turns into something different. Then the resistance, now we're not resisting anymore. Now we're this crowd who recognizes the power that we have, and we use it to push our elected officials to be as I don't want to say as good as they can be, but, you know, to be as effective as possible.
Right.
With a full understanding that we live in a country that is, you know, a whole bunch of people are Republican, a whole bunch of people are conservative. So you're not going to always going to get your uber progressive agenda. It's just not, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I want it, but I'm willing to accept that I'm not always going to get everything I want, because
right.
I have to share this country with people who have very different ideas than I do. And they're going to vote differently than I do. So I get that. And that's okay.
Right. And people are entitled to their opinions, but there are, one of the things that I really see myself getting a little crazy over in defense of the political arm of the pro-choice movement, and that is something that I will, like, I feel like I would die fighting for.
Yeah, me too.
A woman's right to choose.
Yeah, you know, people want to put that into the category of pet issues. No, it's not. It's an economic issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that is, it's bodily autonomy. If
mm-hmm.
if this was a you know, if the equal discrimination was happening against men and their bodies, this wouldn't even be an issue. But because it's women, it's an issue. No, I'm right there with you. And I'm
mm-hmm.
at the point where I'm not going to have any kids. I'm not even worried about getting pregnant. But I will worry about all the young women coming up. I want them
mm-hmm.
to have exactly the same, you know, opportunities and choices that I've had. They deserve it.
Well, absolutely. And what the economic repercussions when a woman is forced to have a child that she either can't afford to have, doesn't want to have, or whatever her reasons yeah. are, you know, that would never happen ever in a million years if men had to make the choice. Look, you know what? I really can't afford having another child. Right. And so I'm going to support my wife in you know, her having an abortion because I need to continue to go to work and support this family the best I can. This wouldn't even be a discussion.
Exactly.
And so I'm sick as fuck of that argument. And so, yeah, we're going to go out there and fight for truth and for our rights and for
justice common, in the American way.
That's right.
Well, before, you know, before we wrap up and feel free to add your own thing, I want to add something, in the, I told you so file. You know, I just get so irritated sometimes, but back in October when Trump Access Hollywood video came out, I did a post about Billy Bush, and I didn't realize at the time he was related to the Bush family, George Bush. I didn't really know anything about him at all. I'd recognized his face and that was about it. So anyway, I heard all the stupid shit he said on the tape. And I thought to myself that his reaction to Donald Trump was a direct result of rape culture. So I posted about this and basically the gist of it was, and I put this on my Facebook page the other day, that he felt a certain amount of pressure to please the guest. And, you know, now that we have this, article where he was interviewed, now we kind of understand where his head was at. But at the time, we didn't. All we could do was listen to the tape and make our own, you know, assumptions. So of course, when I put this on Facebook and I explained that he felt he needed to, you know, go along and egg Trump on and all this stuff, that it was basically out of awkwardness and he was just trying to make his guest happy, and that this, you know, he was behaving this way because of rape culture, and then like everybody jumps down my throat and everybody wants to attack Billy Bush, and I kept trying to say it, this is not about whether or not he is a jerk or a pervert or an asshole. This is about his reaction is because of a culture that we have. It exists, this whole not standing up to men who are, or even women who are promoting rape culture. And, you know, I had an experience a couple of years ago. I was new to the whole, you know, activism thing and feminist. I mean, I've always been a feminist, but not so much like announcing it every 5 minutes. So I was sitting with two fathers, and they both have daughters, and I was commenting, we were talking about the Steubenville rape case that was in the news at the time. And so I, you know, I said what I had to say about it. I don't really remember what it was. And then one of the fathers made a joke, and then the other one laughed. And I don't remember what it was, but it was offensive to me. And I was sitting there with him, and I said something along the lines of, well, you're both fathers of daughters, and you wouldn't want anything to happen to your daughters. And they were like, oh, of course not. Of course not. Of course not. And I left that situation, and I was very upset. I didn't scold them or call them out, but I left, and I thought to myself, why did they feel they should make a joke at that point? And then a few days later, it kind of dawned on me, and I thought, well, here they were sitting with me, an outspoken feminist, and they obviously they're good fathers, and they love their daughters. I've seen firsthand. I think they just didn't know what else to do. I think they felt awkward and weird, and and they didn't know how to handle it. So out of feeling uncomfortable, one of them made a stupid joke and the other one laughed. Yeah. And I didn't really speak up. And so just all of that to me is rape culture, including my reaction. Because now if I could go back, I wouldn't try to scold them or make them feel badly. I would just kind of point out that, you know, we live in this culture where it's acceptable to blah, 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 and it needs to change. And, you know, when men see other men saying things or doing things, I think they should speak up. And you know, that goes to whether it's racism or any kind of bigotry, sexism, racism. People are afraid to speak up because they don't either want to lose their jobs or, you know, I've certainly in past situations allowed certain comments to go by because it was, you know, work colleagues said something that was inappropriate. But if I would have made a big deal out of it, I would look like I was the problem person. I might not lose my job over it, but I certainly am not going to get any points for being the, you know, the police, you know, mm-hmm. like the rape mm-hmm. police or whatever. But I think that this Billy Bush thing, you know, everybody was jumping down my throat for taking up for him and defending him. And it's like, oh my God, I wasn't defending him. And I'm just so sick and tired. And I know I'm not going to stop it by bitching about it here, but I'm just like, I just have to, like, I told you, reading when he was explaining after that whole tape thing came out, his daughter was horrified about how he reacted. And then
his 15-year-old.
Yeah. So that gave him a whole new perspective. And it made him realize, I don't care if it took a personal situation for him to get that way. I'm glad that he recognizes that it was awful and inappropriate. I'm glad. And I'm glad that this story is out for other people to read, because it's just a way, you know, you bring it into the conversation, and that's how things, that's one way things can help change how our culture deals with things like that and you know, gets rid of, hopefully eventually gets rid of this rape culture that's just so strong, and it's men and women.
Right. So we speak up, we educate the young people. You know, listen, oh my God, I just sounded like a 400-year-old person. But, you know, we've talked about this. I have a son who's turning
30.
We educate the young people. The youth. I've talked to my son on a couple of occasions because you know, he's in junior high, and kids are, their hormones are going cuckoo-loo, and they, you know, they've got all sorts of stuff going on. And we reiterate to him on a very regular basis, it's about consent. It's between you and the person you're with. And if one of you guys doesn't want to go, it doesn't happen. And, you know, you speak out when, you know, kids his age are already, you know, there are pressures of all kinds, from, you know, the boys and girls I know on a recent outing, a boy was slut shaming a girl. They're in junior high. Mm-hmm. And this is because things didn't, you know, go his way or whatever, you know, she broke up with him, and he turned it around and slut shamed her. Mm-hmm. These are little kids.
Yeah. I was slut shamed when I was 13.
Oh my God. I can't believe it, but then I can believe it because I remember getting really drunk at a party my freshman year in high school, you know, can't handle the liquor. Mm-hmm. And I ended up having to go lay down in the bedroom of, the older brother, my girlfriend's brother was having the party, and he said, go lay down in my room. Well, someone came in and was like, thought it would be a perfect opportunity to get with me. Well, I had no interest in that. Did not take part in it. But 2 years later, a story came around that when you were, you know, in the bedroom and so-and-so came in, and I ended up having sex with him. And that was the story that had traveled around mm-hmm. for 2 years. And a friend of mine came out and said this. I was crushed.
Yeah.
And how do you go back a couple years later? Well, I had already had, you know, a reputation, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that thing happens. And that, you know, what do you do in that case? I, you know, I was kind of ruined from that for a little while. Yeah. And that sort of thing goes on, and guys are encouraged. That was definitely locker room talk. And that shit goes on. And that was 30 years ago for me, but it still happens to this very day at my kid's junior high school.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know who these kids are. I just, you know, the story, it gets back, and you hear these things, and it's like, this is when you sit people down and you say, this is not okay under any circumstances, whether you're 50 or 70 or 12. I don't know. It breaks my heart.
Yeah. I mean, I liked this guy named Joey, and you know, I was, at the time 13, as I said, and this was the first year that I went on a diet. I was quite chubby, And I remember I was in eighth grade and I looked around and all the girls, like, I think I was probably about 5'8" and I think I weighed 170 pounds. So, I mean, I wasn't obese or anything, but I was quite chubby. And I looked at all these girls who were like 5 foot tall and weighed 90 pounds. And I thought, oh my God. So I went on a diet that year. And that was the first time that I ever, you know, really ever went on any kind of a diet. And that started my lifelong obsession with my weight. But I liked this guy named Joey, and he was, I believe he was Japanese. And I remember I liked him because I had a huge crush on Mick Jagger that year. I just fell in love with him. And Joey, to me, was like the Japanese version of Mick Jagger.
Okay, I'm getting a visual.
And he was actually cute. He was a cute Japanese kid with these like kind of like bluish tinted glasses. And he had like the Mick Jagger hair. And so he found out that I had a crush on him. And of course, I was gross to him because I was big and I was much bigger than he was. I probably weighed like double what he weighed. And he called me a slut. And it was like, are you kidding? I was so the opposite of what people think is a slut. You know, I mean, I think the term slut is ridiculous in and of itself. But, you know, I mean, I had never kissed a boy. I was such a little prude. But you know, he didn't know how to handle the fact that I had a crush on him. So he just called me a slut. So then I started calling him a hemorrhoid, and I would leave Preparation H, like coupons in his locker. So little fucking jerk.
You're a hemorrhoid. That is fantastic.
Oh, well, I guess we should start wrapping it up. But we're going to do our other segment. I can't even speak. Other segment and another thing. But before, I'm going to do the little push to all the people listening. You know, you can support the show by becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. And we've got a couple tiers. We've got the dollar a month, and that you will get our undying gratitude. And I know you want that. Because who doesn't want that?
Yeah,
and then the $5 a month is going to get you access to what we're going to do next, which is called And Another Thing. So it's the bonus show, and it follows the free shows. And we're just going to continue our conversations, maybe get a little juicy here and there. And then the $10 thing has changed. It used to be that I was doing a third show a month, not doing the third show anymore. So basically the $10 is just us begging you to support the show. Please support the show. You don't have to pledge $1, $5, or $10. You could pledge more or less or whatever you want. So, you know, we're independent podcasters, and we're just asking for your support if you think it's a good thing. Support any podcasters. And
then it's a great thing.
Yeah, and then you can follow Stephanie on Twitter. What's your Twitter account?
Oh, I love you. At Lady Brain Show.
Okay, at Lady Brain Show, and I'm at Author Kimberly, and that's KIMBERLEY. Don't forget the extra E. And there you go. So cool. Well, awesome. I think we covered a lot of roads, so stick around for And Another Thing. Well, the things that you do.